not going to edit that out.
Hello, and welcome to Charlie Foxtrot. This is a Stargate Universe podcast. I'm Cetra.
And I'm Boom.
And we finally get to watch the best, worst episode ever.
Didn't I text you after I watched it having so many feelings I didn't know how to handle it?
Oh my god. And then just, like, your text made me, like, think through everything that happens in it and be like, oh, so many feelings.
I don't remember having this intense of feelings the first time I watched it, or the second time, but I guess this time I was just like, nope, everything is wrong and we're all gonna die.
Yeah, I mean, because I was binging it pretty hard the first time through, and I was already a bit of the way into Force Over Distance, like, I wasn't seeing the rush that was in Force Over mm-hmm. Distance until this episode happened. And then Ooh. I was like, oh, shit.
Force Over Distance has some significant leaps, like Gloria in there, I believe, is like a concert violinist, where all you really do know is that she plays violin in Human.
Yeah, she's here, she's playing violin very well.
Right, and she might be a teacher.
We also know, but, I mean, let's extrapolate mm-hmm. here. We know that the only people Rush respects and cares about are people who are incredibly proficient at what they
right.
do.
He doesn't care what it is, just as long as you're good at it.
Yeah, and we see no evidence of another career in Gloria's life.
No, you don't.
So, I mean, I don't think it's that big of a leap to be like, well...
No, it's not.
If the violin is what Gloria turns to in times of, you know, needing emotional support or needing to distract herself, then I don't think it's that far of a leap to be like, well, she plays violin and Rush loves her. She must be really good at violin or everything else she does or, you know, all of the above. So the actual episode yes. opens with, like, this incredibly convoluted selection of clips from the show.
Right.
Like, leading us into this very particular thought process about the chair.
Right.
But it doesn't start with the chair. It starts with Rush in bed with a lady.
Looking very pained.
Oh, God.
As he gets up at 4... What was it? 46? 646? I can't remember.
I think it's 416.
Whatever it is, it has 46 in it.
Oh, no, 646 it is. Interesting.
Hint number one.
Yeah. He has his tiny little notebooks.
Yep.
And his glasses are fixed.
He also knows where her glasses are.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know where his glasses are right now in reality. Or he might... They're on that.
Oh, yeah,
that's
true. So we need to go back and rewatch the last three episodes and realize that Rush has been suffering from, like, a growing migraine for the last however many days since he got taken by the Nikai.
Oh, because you think that because he doesn't have his glasses, his vision must be really hurting him?
Yeah, oh. I assume so. I know mine does.
Oh, I've never.
And my prescription's not even very strong.
Oh, I'm just blurry.
Oh.
Hmm.
Yeah, if you... Well, see, and that may be... Because my eyes are good enough that I can focus mm-hmm. on the majority of my environment, but one eye is significantly weaker than the other.
Mm-hmm.
If I am not wearing my glasses for most of a day and then put them on, or vice versa, the tension headache sets in pretty fast.
Wow, that sucks. I am glad that my eyes aren't like that, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mine aren't that bad. I have good depth perception still. My biggest thing, and I don't know how much of this I can just kind of skip across, but how Rush acts in these memory/dream/flashback sequences
mm-hmm.
annoys me more every time.
Why is that?
Because I don't know if he...
acted that way?
If we're seeing him acting like this because... Mm-hmm. This is the Nicholas Rush who is on Destiny, who is aware that this is a dream interface that he's constructed to research this problem.
Right.
Or if this has any bearing on the way he acted in reality in these situations.
So I thought about this long and hard because great minds think alike. And I really do think this is Rush on Destiny reacting to this situation because he does have awareness of what's happening. I also think... we know that Rush is very hard on himself.
Yeah.
And I think that he thinks he was as bad as this. He might not have been. Like, he might have been overtly, you know, very supportive and kind, though we know a little bit that he isn't, because he feels very guilty that he wasn't there for her at all and wasn't there when she died. But this is before he was recruited to the Stargate program, right? In these memories.
Well, and he is, I mean, he's obviously going somewhat through the chronological sequence of that time.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise, like, why would he even bother going to the school and teaching his class of idiots, like...
Right.
It's obvious that some of Gloria's reactions aren't anything she could have done at the time.
So the commentary said that the way they justified it was that Rush was guessing at what her reaction would have been like if he had done it that way. So he can't know how she was reacting over the phone. And you know for a fact that when she called him, you probably know that he was there with her at the oncologist.
We don't know that.
I think he was.
Then why does he have memories of...
of Connie? See, I think that's just him supplanting that in. But okay, let's say
memories of a colleague coming up to him in the hallway and being like, no, why aren't you with your wife? Like,
right, okay. Well, no, that's fair enough.
I don't know. It just...
But he couldn't have known how she would have reacted over the phone, and I bet he wasn't that dismissive of her.
God, I hope not.
Right.
I mean, but at the same time, like, he still comes home. He still overhears this conversation of her talking to her friend about how she wants to go home to England and can't. Like,
and he won't go with her. But at that time, he probably accepted the Stargate program. That's not an excuse. I'm just saying that's probably where his head
was. Well, yeah, that was presumably a real thing that happened, regardless of the tone of his other interactions.
Right.
He clearly wasn't handling it super well. Anyway, it's really hard. I don't remember it painting Rush in such a questionable light the first time I watched it. Like,
right.
I just adored him all the way through. And now I'm like, if he was even one-tenth this much of an asshole to his wife, who had cancer for not the first, but at least the second time.
Yeah.
Christ on a crutch.
Right. Well, I mean, there is some... I'm not going to say justification. There is obviously some emotional inability to handle it a second time.
Oh, yeah.
But... And I agree with you. He... If it was even a tenth of this, he was a huge, huge jerk. But I also think that he's more of a jerk in this because he knows they're just memories than he probably actually was before. I think before he was probably distant because I think he had a very strong feeling that when it came back that this was going to be the end. And I think he couldn't handle that. And you know he couldn't handle that because the reason why he's so focused on Destiny is because if Destiny doesn't work out, it means that he ignored his wife for no reason. He needs to have that purpose there to assuage his guilt, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, he obviously was distant to her.
Yeah, if this wasn't worth something, then what did it mean?
Right. Because he couldn't handle her death. He just, you know he couldn't also, because later on, like, he's looking at the picture of his wife and crying.
Oh, yeah.
He's constantly looking at his wedding ring up until he loses it when the Nakai take him. Gloria comes into his conscience.
I believe he still has his ring in either this episode or next episode.
Oh, does he? They were wrong.
Because we see his hands, and I will let you know when I see it. Because I watched Human and the following two episodes the other night, and then watched Human again, and yeah, anyway.
So you are wallowing in the feels.
But anyway, also the way that he, like, clearly... He is reliving this in a very... He's being more affected than he appears to be by it, based on his reactions to Mandy an episode or two from now.
Right. Oh, yeah. So. We'll get to Mandy.
Yeah.
Poor Mandy. How about we go back, though, and to Rush's classroom?
Yeah.
So this is where I think we get the idea of what kind of scientist he is and why like say Force of a Distance says he's in cryptography. Because why would we be teaching anything else unless he is aware that he is on Destiny and he's trying to solve this puzzle and he just morphed the class into a cryptography class.
Well, yeah, he is definitely aware of that. Mm-hmm. Because he yells at them later, like,
yeah, but
you
they
know,
could just
I
be stupid students who don't know anything about cryptography yet, because it's a
101. Well, but I'm sure that presenting an impossible, because what he presents to them later is, you know, imagine that you had a problem that wasn't derived from any previous kind of encryption, because mm-hmm. it was made way before all the other kinds of encryption. How do you attack it?
Right.
And the students all go, duh, and he gets real mad at them.
But how does that fit with, so, like, what we know is that he was trying to solve the problem of energy fluctuations, right? And getting enough energy to go to Destiny.
Yeah.
How?
Enough energy stabilized, yeah.
Right. That is a very, very different specialization than talking to your class about mathematics and cryptography. Like, that's a very different set of math and science skills.
Yeah. And I'm not sure. I mean, I think the implication is that it was somehow a mathematical problem, right? Like, the engineering was fine, but he needed, like, this way to, a way to convert the energy or something.
Or maybe they needed a specific formula to convert the energy. I don't know. I don't really know. I don't think they explain it that well.
Yeah.
I think they're just like, he's a scientist. He does all the science.
You know, don't ever, like, watch Criminal Minds when they're trying to explain how internet works. because as much as I love that show, and I do love it, man, they are really bad at understanding or explaining how anything on the internet actually works.
Hey, you just described how I feel about zoom in and enhance. As a graphic designer, I'm like, unless those are fucking vectors, which I know they aren't.
Oh, yeah.
All that does is make it blurry.
Yeah, like, oh, we're going to make this shitty convenience store video and be able to read a license plate off of it because yeah. I have the technology that does that. I'm like,
how
really?
How is it higher resolution zoomed in than when it's zoomed out? That is a physical impossibility.
Lol, science.
Anyways, so I guess we'll just decide that Nick does something. We just don't know what it is.
Yeah. Nick does the math. It's important math.
Then Constance talks to him, and I guess you're right. I kind of thought that he had purposely... he knows that information comes to him more easily when he's with Gloria, but I think it's so painful for him that he's trying to move out of his memories, and that is why I thought... he had gone to the oncologist with her in reality, but in this timeline that of his memories that he's obviously altering by being
it
in
also,
them.
I mean, the sequence here, let's assume the phone conversation is different, but
mm-hmm.
what do we know about Rush? Mm. Rush sees a situation way in advance and he just jumps to the conclusion and the best possible, you know, thing to do overall.
So he sees his wife is going to die.
He knows that if Gloria's Dr. A has sent her to the specialty Dr. B, Dr. B is going to find cancer. Mm-hmm. She's going to be sick. His mm-hmm. presence is going to make no difference whatsoever.
Right.
He might as well go to school and do his work.
But what's interesting, though, is, you know, at the end of it, Gloria insinuates that Rush is not the Rush she knows. Like, the Rush that decides, like, it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah,
like,
well, and that... I mean, the way Gloria acts in the end of the episode is absolutely why stories like Force Over Distance hypothesize that that is some portion of Destiny inserting itself into his simulation. Or
you mean
is the
a kindness or the or him
or the AI
doing
because
the purpose going for the purpose no matter what?
No, specifically Gloria being like
trying to forgive him.
Yeah, you know I loved you. You know that you did the best that you could. The person you've become is not who you were.
Right.
Like,
well, I assume that was Rush Because I think you can still have... Well, yeah, I mean, yes, I can see Destiny AI fanfic idea.
Concepts,
that could be canon, for sure. But I also could see this as an introspective moment. Like, human beings are capable of recognizing that they are different than they were before.
Yeah.
Like, I am... 20-year-old me, I think, would be very happy to be me now. I'm a little bit... I'm way less better. Way less agoraphobic. Rush just kind of went the opposite way. Like, I know Rush knows that he used to be a decent guy.
Yeah.
At least we think. He has to have been. Mandy liked him.
Well, and... Mandy liked him. And Mandy's just a great human in general.
Yeah.
He used to teach people.
Right.
And...
He had a pretty full class.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they had no choice. But that was a pretty big lecture hall.
Yeah. And it was probably not a 101.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I've seen a couple of places the school he teaches at identified as Berkeley, but I see no evidence of that here.
I have no idea where he is. It's America land.
Yep.
So for the phone call, not to belabor it at all, but the way I had interpreted it was that he tells her that he'll come home even though he doesn't want to, because I think he feels guilty. Even though it's a memory and it's not real, I think he still wants to be there. For her.
Yeah, he also, like, he obviously goes home later than she would have wanted him to.
Right.
Because she's crying when she gets off the phone, and...
Well, Nick thinks she would be crying.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Isn't it interesting I call him Nick because in this episode, they call him Nick more than Rush.
it's interesting to me that she calls him Nicholas. Gloria unfailingly uses his full name, I believe, as does Mandy. When she's trying to clarify who she's talking about two episodes from now, she says Nick, and Eli goes, Nick? And she's like, Nicholas.
And like Nicholas?
Obviously, Nicholas? And Eli's like, who? Like, oh, Rush? I am deeply pleased with the actress choice for Emily. Like, she's just stunning.
I love her.
She's a good actress. She, you know, she can stand up against Robert Carlyle, which is a thing.
Yeah, the commentary was mentioning, like, that how good their chemistry was and how glad they chose her. Apparently she was like, I can do an American accent. And they're like, no, you're perfect.
No, you're perfect. Be British. It's great.
And I was, in my head, I was like, the Scots hate the Brits.
Yeah.
But obviously not
if they
really.
Met in America...
Well, no, Scots marry Brits all the time. Scots are technically Brits. Sorry, Scots marry English all the time. It happens. My friend Alistair is married to an English lady, so it's not...
Yeah.
But I like to pretend that stereotypes are real.
Yeah.
In this case.
Well, Rush is not the most stereotypical Scotsman ever, so...
No. Not boozing all the time.
So, yeah, Gloria plays violin and looks very sad, and Rush doesn't talk to her, and... goes into his creepy conspiracy theory office.
Right. I wrote in my notes how much of Gloria's reactions are real, but I think we may have belabored that.
Yeah, I mean...
Because she knows he did that.
She heard him open the door.
Right.
She heard him pause. And then Daniel Jackson.
Yay, Daniel! And I love that Rush is just like, I know what it's all about. Like, see, he doesn't... That's why I'm saying he's changing his memories. He never did that to Daniel.
Oh, yeah. Which makes me think, and I'm not sure, like, the way Rush talks in this, he talks as though he's been going through this sequence over and over again.
Oh, like he wishes that he hadn't said yes.
Like, well, no. That in order to try and find this, like, this, what we're seeing, is not the first time he's gone through this whole series of events.
Oh,
trying to
so?
Find clues about the code.
That's an interesting idea. See, where I was going with that is I feel like he has in his head, through his guilt, has replayed this conversation over and over and like wonder and made up what-if situations.
Oh, I'm certain that he has.
And I feel like this is him replaying the what-if situation that he last landed on. Like, what if I told Daniel to fuck off?
Yeah.
But Daniel keeps coming back, so maybe he did tell Daniel to fuck off the first time.
Well, yeah, I assumed so. Like, because Daniel wouldn't just show up at someone's office.
Right.
you know, he would have tried calling first, which presumably Rush was ignoring. He would have tried emailing, which presumably Rush was ignoring.
Right.
Like,
so maybe Rush was trying to deal with his wife and be supportive in some ways. I still think he was probably a huge jerk about it.
Yeah. I mean, he's Rush.
Right. Well, I mean, it's difficult. I do find it difficult to be angry with someone who is going
through
emotional...
Oh, whose wife is dying. No, yeah.
Yes, they should be there for them. But you can never know how you will react emotionally until it happens.
Well, and the other thing is that we, when we get back out of the chair, which I think we're about to after this conversation with Daniel. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as Brody, and it is Brody, incidentally.
I know.
Who is the only one who Rush wanted involved. Rush didn't want anyone else to know.
Nope.
And it is Brody who's watching the monitors this whole damn time. We don't know how long Rush has been in the chair.
Nope. It was Brody that he trusted to help develop the program to buffer it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Sorry, where was I? I'm looking at Adam Brody's face now.
You're saying before the chair.
So when Rush went in, he knew that the memories he specifically selected to utilize for this interface would have the highest possibility of being damaged or deleted by the process.
Right. He wants them gone. He does not like what they are.
Which means likely he has been reliving this.
Right.
Over and over and over. And he's like, this is the thing that's keeping me from functioning.
Yeah.
This is the thing that is just keeping me fucked up and wanting to crawl in a hole, and I need to be able to move on. So if I have to lose this, fine.
See, I think it's those memories that make him do all those things that Young finds questionable that drives him consistently to keep doing it. Because I think he feels like as long as there's purpose, I won't relive these memories as much.
Mm.
I don't know. That's, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, I think any time that he makes a decision which affects people's lives and he has a reason to question it, he goes back to this one as well.
Right.
Right? Like, did I make the right decision?
I mean, well, that makes sense because later on, I mean, I know I just read Meta about it and we haven't discussed this totally. We have done a little bit. That I really think that when Gloria manifests as Destiny's AI, that she's his conscience. Because she's always just questioning, are you doing the right thing? Are you doing the right thing?
And yeah, either it's an AI or it's Rush hallucinating. So, you know.
Who knows? Who knows what it is? But it's still a conscious to me.
She is definitely the indicator of his fallibility.
So what's interesting to me, though, is that he would want to delete the memories that basically drive him. Because he says to himself, because I know it's not Gloria, that this is not who I was.
Yeah.
And I assume he's this way. And he also says to himself, I am the way I am because I lost Gloria.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if he did permanently lose these memories, would the Destiny crew be dead? Because he lost that drive and that purpose to make the mission work, would he give up?
In a lot of ways, like, if memories of her and the choices he made surrounding her death are what keeps him questioning his own judgment, in a way that Young often does not question his own judgment, right? Like, comparing them as leaders.
Right.
Rush appears to make decisions faster.
Right.
But in a lot of ways, Rush is also more willing to reevaluate his own judgments than Young is.
Well, I mean, Young also admits when he's wrong.
Yes, but it takes Young a lot longer to change his mind about things.
That's true. That's true.
Anyway.
Wow, we are not even through the first 5 minutes, but I think we still discussed a big bulk of the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to just let it kind of play through because, oddly, as much as goes on in this episode, like,
not a whole lot does.
Yeah. So much of it is mental. Like, yeah, you can talk through every word Rush says to Gloria, but just a general cover of he's more of an asshole than he should be.
No, I agree.
Yeah. There is a lot of good Brody in this episode.
He does really good
matter-of-fact explaining. He is unfailingly loyal to and defensive of Rush.
I know!
And he's delightful, and I adore him.
I know. I I don't know why they don't maintain this relationship as well in the second season. And I wonder if it's just because no one noticed that it happened at all. Like, maybe they just gave Brody these lines because he's in the science team.
Well, I really kind of want to go through and, like, make a list of which writers are around and who's credited on which episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Because I continue to feel like there are different plot lines happening. And, like, maybe every fifth episode connects to itself and is internally consistent in terms of character relationships.
Right. I feel like, plot-wise, a lot of things are fairly consistent through this long arc, which is impressive. But character growth-wise, definitely, you're like,
Yeah, stuff's a little jittery.
Yeah. But the Brody Rush thing has been fairly consistent. And as I said, it might just be because...
We're looking for it now?
Well, yes, that. And also, there's only really two scientists that Rush talks to. And that's Dale, which has already been established that... Though, actually, I question this because, obviously, last episode, Volker and Rush were, like, standing next to each other and agreeing on things. But Volker has been established as a whiny person that Rush is not terribly fond of. And then Brody has been established as a fairly silent in the background character.
Yeah.
So, it just could be that a lucky happenstance has made him fairly consistent. But it's really cool that he has, since Earth, and even before Earth, just been consistently taking Rush's side and being the only one that Rush trusts. And it's so weird that they don't indulge in that. Like, you have to really be watching for it to understand it.
Yeah, which is odd. But...
Yeah. I wonder if they just didn't know. It's kind of like Yanto from Torchwood.
Yeah.
So he was supposed to not be a major character at all.
Oh, clearly.
And, but Gareth David Lloyd, like, decided, I'm going to act the shit out of this.
Yep.
And he did. And then he grew into something a whole lot more. And it's all just because GDL was like, I don't want to be bored. And I think every character is interesting no matter what. And I think Peter Calamus is also that way. By the way, did you know he voiced Goku? He's the original voice of Goku.
Really?
I know. Isn't that crazy?
That's amazing. My childhood is all coming back to the early 2000s.
Yeah. Anyways, we can get off Brody, but I did write in my note, Brody!
Yeah, like, so good. So good.
What I do find important about that conversation, so I'm just going to add this in, is that Brody says that Rush knows he needs to, like, create a door if he wants to leave. And you'll notice that Rush several times throughout this looks at the door like he wants to give up.
Yeah.
Many, many times he looks at a door and is like, I want to walk out.
But also... specifically, the way Brody phrases it is, like, he will find a door.
Right.
That is, like, a distinctive door, and he'll know it.
Oh. That makes it even better. That means he's looking at doors, but he knows that they aren't.
Yeah, he's looking at doors, and he's going, okay, I can't leave yet.
I want to.
And he's avoiding the one place where it turns out that the door is.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's not totally true, because when he's talking to Daniel the last time, he just decides, he's like, okay, I'm going out this door now.
Yeah.
Like, that's I feel like if he just decides that's the door, then that's the door. That was, like, the implication I got.
Oh. Okay. I mean, maybe.
But I like yours better.
We get a little bit back on the ship of Chloe being like, Eli, don't be a jerk. And Eli being like, oh, fine, I can't quit you, Chloe.
Well, I feel like if Eli was not the only other person who wasn't her boyfriend that was the same age, that she should be like, fuck you, Eli, and not try and rebuild that bridge. But I think because he is the only one who could possibly relate to her, she has to, like, swallow her pride and be like, even though you're being the jerk, I'll be the one who apologizes.
Yeah.
Though, notice, she doesn't say that she didn't betray him.
Yeah, she says, I know you think I betrayed you.
Right?
Which is interesting.
Yeah, which feeds into my theory that she did purposely distract him.
Well, and here's the deal. If you want to play, like, Chloe is a politician.
Mm.
Both by breeding and training.
Mm.
Eli is an important person with an important set of skills.
Mm-hmm.
Who it behooves her to be close to.
Because
it's become obvious that no matter what happens in terms of power shifts, whoever is in power is going to want Eli.
I have never thought Chloe is that way, but I like that idea.
Well, she does have evil Nakai genes growing inside her, too. Maybe she's becoming more conniving.
Maybe. I just don't see her as that. Like, I see her
conniving
only in the way that, like, you know, she did believe in Rush and she thought no one was going to get hurt and blah, blah, blah. But I really, that would be super cool if that's what she was thinking.
Yeah. I'm fantasy booking a different character than Chloe is at this point, but.
Yeah, I just don't think she is that way.
So drop out of FTL, the gate dials, Volker is there because Brody is doing more important things. And Chloe and Eli play this, like, ridiculous game with Young to be like, we want to go. Can we go to the planet? Dad, we want to go to the planet. Can we go to the planet?
Right.
We're going to make up shit about how good we would be on the planet. And Young's like, I didn't even say no.
Right. Young is just like, why are they okay? And then he laughs at him like, oh, those kids. And then they're going to die.
Yeah. This episode ends it super dead for all of them.
Maybe you shouldn't be so lackadaisical with who you send planet side, Young. You know what sucks is that I even get mad at Young in this episode, even though he's not interacting with Rush, which is usually the only time I get mad at Young. No, that's not true. I get mad at him when he's with his ex-wife.
No. Because his first freaking scene is coming in and being like, what happens if we unplug him? He dies? Well, we might have to unplug him.
Right.
Like,
And it's hypocritical,
you told him
too.
To sit in the damn chair. You told him not to let anybody else ever do it again. He sat in the damn chair. So shut your mouth and let him do what he's doing.
Yeah, like, Rush did exactly what you told him to.
Because you backed him into a corner. You told him nobody could but him. So he put his own damn brain on the line.
Yeah.
So get over it and let it happen. You're not allowed to mistrust him and question him on his freaking motives right now.
Right, and
poor
I love that.
You.
And what's even better is that he manages to get the cipher at the end, and somehow it's his fault that he can't immediately just magically make the ship systems work after that.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah, he comes out of hours in this chair in an altered state.
Right.
And Young is immediately like, fix the ship. And Rush goes, that is outside of my bandwidth right now.
Yeah.
And Young goes, okay, fine, and walks off. I'm like, but the man is not a freaking computing machine who just produces answers for you.
Right. That's Eli.
Yeah. Talk to Math Boy. Oh, wait, he's busy panicking on a planet under a rubble.
Yep, because they couldn't figure out what maps look like. Oh, I can't wait to talk about that episode because I really love the map stuff. But anyways.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. We can get pretty justifiably mad at Young, who's only in the episode for about 2 minutes.
Yeah, he doesn't do much. Luis
I do like
had
him.
Had an easy week.
Well, until he loses his 3 favorite people.
Yeah.
But I do like him laughing and being a little bit more genial as a leader.
Well, Rush might die. Of course he's happy.
He's so pissed about Rush maybe dying, though, when he's in the room. And I just like Brody's cold looks to him, like...
Oh, yeah. Like,
what the fuck, dude?
I know you don't care. You forced him to do this because you know Brody spent 2 days trying to talk Rush out of doing this.
Probably.
Like, in a very quiet Brody way.
Right. In a very logical, rational way. That could just be my headcanon for my fix, but I'm going to pretend that's real.
Yeah. So we get a scene of Rush yelling at his students. If we assume there's been some sort of time lapse, and that this is... Because, obviously, Gloria was just going to the oncologist. She was not very sick yet.
Right.
If we assume that the problem he was putting to his students that they couldn't solve was actually the how to get to destiny problem, rather than this new cryptography problem.
Ooh, that's an interesting idea.
Then a conversation like this happened.
Right.
Daniel was there watching his class, watching him freak out, telling him it's not their fault that, you know, they can't solve your problem. And then again, Rush breaks the fourth wall whatever, says, yeah, well, somebody else is going to solve it. Some stupid kid with no training and no motivation to do anything.
I do love that he admits that out loud to himself.
Which is really, like, that's really what he doesn't like about Eli.
Right.
Is that Eli has no motivation, right? Eli has talent and was doing nothing with it.
Oh, no, that's, like, the age-old thing that people in professions hate about people who are talented. It's like, well, congratulations, but you didn't work hard for it, and you still don't give a shit. But it's interesting to me, though, is that Rush, up until this point, has still been, like, I want Eli on my side, and I want to be nice to Eli.
Yeah.
But in his mind, he's basically like, I really don't like that kid right now. But what you were saying, though, about his, like, freak out, it's great minds think alike, I guess, because I was also thinking maybe he had superimposed this cryptography problem on him yelling at his class because he was freaking out about Gloria. So,
yeah,
just wanted you to know I agree.
Yeah.
But I hadn't thought about it being the ninth chevron problem.
Daniel has a moment where he tries to explain, you know, that he also lost his wife and how terrible it is. And Rush is like, okay, let's assume that you're talking to me about the problem I'm actually solving and not just a memory of the problem you tried to help me solve 3 years ago.
Right.
No, being with Gloria is not the answer.
Yeah, that is funny. But I want to just say, like, if this conversation even happened a little bit like that, Daniel, the way you lost your wife is not the way Rush is losing his wife. It is not...
Well...
It's not similar.
He's trying to sympathize. He's being Daniel Jackson, right? Like, he's trying to say, okay, I get where you're coming from. You know, take the time you need. Make sure that... Because you know...
Right.
...that it wouldn't have been Daniel saying, leave your dying wife behind, come to Icarus.
No.
No way in hell. That was Telford. Or O'Neill. Telford.
No, I think it was Rush going, I need to go to Icarus.
Yeah.
I need to get away from this. I don't think anyone told Rush to do that.
Yeah, probably.
Though, it might have been Telford, as much as he hates Telford.
Yeah.
But I assumed he hates Telford because he basically left his wife to die, and then Telford didn't want him on the mission at all. Like,
yeah.
I think that would have been tantamount to him committing suicide. He wouldn't be able to continue if he wasn't allowed to go on Destiny.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting, though. Oh, I just had this thought. So, remember, the very first episode, one of the first things we see of Rush, other than, like, him being all, like, super spy agent and taking Eli away, is, like, him looking at a photo of Gloria. And then right after that, the attack happens. And what does he do? He takes that sort of questionable decision of getting everybody out to Destiny because it's the last chance.
Yep.
And if you watch this episode, you go, oh, it's because he feels so fucking guilty about that.
Yeah.
That he had to make it work, that he was willing to sacrifice everything to make that work.
Yeah. Because if they couldn't get to Destiny and it wasn't worth it, then none of it was worth it.
Right. Then he has to face up that he became a huge dick to the one person he loved. Oh, Rush. I feel like we keep repeating that point. Or I keep repeating that point.
Well, that the whole episode is that point.
Yeah.
Like, that's all there is.
Do you think that things would have been better if Eli was there?
If Eli was where?
If Eli was either, like, you know, instead of going off planet side and monitoring Rush, or if Eli was in the chair instead of Rush.
No, because Eli doesn't trust Rush right now. Yeah. Because we're still in fallout from the coup.
Oh, that's right.
So Eli, well able to help Brody interpret data and that kind of thing,
right,
is definitely in Camp Young right now. I don't think he'd be happy about Young pulling the plug to try and wake Rush up, but that doesn't end up happening. So I don't think TJ would have let Young do it anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you want to talk about next?
So Gloria has this amazing moment of, like, I'm going to eat whatever food I like and, you know, do whatever I want because now I'm dying and it sucks. And Rush does not react at all.
I always wonder if that conversation she has with him at dinner is the most real of all of his memories. because I feel like in this situation, Rush might not have been reacting because he doesn't want to. Like, she's talking about dying.
Yeah.
And I mean.
And he can't handle it either.
Right.
He knows that she deserves his comfort and his affection, and he can't handle it any better than she can.
Right. It reminds me a lot of Hannibal with, Oh, you haven't seen Hannibal. Sorry.
Well, I talk about other shit all the time.
So, Lawrence Fishburne's wife is dying. I don't know why I'm spacing their fucking names. I'm literally watching it for the fourth time again right now. Of cancer, and her name is Bella. Bella keeps hiding it from him because she doesn't want him to know. Because she doesn't want to have to deal with him being emotionally compromised and wanting her to survive when she just wants to die quicker. Like, she doesn't want to keep living in pain just because he can't lose her.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a multitude of reactions a couple probably has when faced with something terminal like this. And I feel like most of the time on media, we only really get like, oh, supportive husband or supportive wife with dying husband and or wife. And I really appreciate in this that they show like, no, like, yeah, it's obviously worse for the person dying, but it is almost as bad for the person who has to watch it happen.
Yeah.
And you can't blame them for reacting the way that they do. Because it's an extreme situation that you can't predict. You can't say to yourself, I am going to be strong and make sure everything is fine. Because you can want to think that all you want, but when it happens, who knows? In any case, I do think it's a real conversation, though, because she's telling him to do the Stargate program, almost. That's what it feels like.
Yeah, well, or assuming that she actually said something like what she says in this, like...
I don't think that Rush would create that.
Yeah, no, she respects that, you know, even if he hasn't told her exactly what the work is, that, like, that his work is important, that it's for the government now, like, and that he needs to be doing it.
Right.
And I think, I mean, she...
And I think it's a way of her loving him and letting him have that distance.
Yeah, I mean, going deeply meta into, like, she knows that she's going to die.
Right.
She knows how much of their lives are tangled up with one another, and she...
She may be very Rush-like herself.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, work that he's doing on his work is going to live on longer than she is, right?
Right.
The work he's doing of sitting at a table trying to be sympathetic may not be as valuable to the future of the world as his other work.
Which is a very Rush-like consideration. Maybe that's why he loved her, is they have very similar outlooks on life. But I still don't... So if this is indeed true, which to me it feels like that, because I think Rush feels so guilty that he would not put those words in her mouth.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't believe that. He doesn't believe...
No, I assume that almost every situation...
is almost as real as it could
with
be.
That at least Gloria is as real as she can be, because I don't believe he would have changed anything about how she reacted if he could help it.
True. Well, in any case, she said, you know, go do your work, and he's... I feel like he doesn't... I don't know why he doesn't glom on to this instead of glomming on to all of the other shitty things and unsupportive things he did. Like, she gave him an out, and he refuses to acknowledge that she did.
Well, because he's a person with deep guilt and self-blame outside of this, right?
True.
I assume he's always been a little bit of that.
But, I mean, you have to appreciate that he starts weeping when she leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So you know he is very emotionally affected by all of this.
And he, he doesn't know how to...
handle it.
Yeah, be around her without breaking down. Anyway.
Back on the planet, let's make it happier.
Yeah, back on the planet, Eli and Chloe are the two stooges, and they convince everybody to go down into a pit, and Greer doesn't like it because Greer is smart.
Right.
And...
I mean, no, Chloe had a point, though. Like, any place that, in the history of the Stargate program...
Oh, yeah. Half of Atlantis' ZPMs came from, like, ruins like this, right?
Exactly.
But...
What I hate, though, is she goes, oh, I know, guys, big nerd moment. I'm like, shut up, Chloe. No one fucking thought that.
Like, you were freaking smart. You said a thing that was true. Own it.
Right, yeah. Why are you ashamed that you said something smart?
Because she's a girl.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
Because this is still the media. Anyway,
Yeah.
I like the Greer character exploration. It's not really growth that we get down here.
Right.
But I hate everything else about them getting trapped in this freaking maze and whatever. Like,
Right.
if I wanted to watch Stargate Atlantis, I'd go watch Stargate Atlantis, and I
Oh
don't.
my God, that is exactly what I thought. But I do sort of like the idea that they got left behind. Like, I like the tension that has.
Oh, yeah, I really like the next episode, and I like, them trying to chase one way and ending up all the way back, at this planet and that planet, and realizing, like, Destiny's going a long way, but the
Right.
Stargates go further faster,
Yeah.
right? Like, that's what Stargates do.
God, that's such a good, it's a good episode, but oh, it made me sick with tension. How, like, especially when, obviously, we've seen it several times, so we know what's gonna happen, but that first time, I was just like, oh my, how the
Well,
fuck are they gonna do that?
I don't know if it's the end of this one or the end of the next one, but like the as Greer is running, like running, just dead out trying to get to the Stargate, I didn't remember. Like I invented a memory in my mind of him bursting into the clearing and like catching them at the last minute, or seeing the Stargate close, or
I
something
did
like that.
too. You know why? It's because that's how they always do it in TV shows, and I really appreciate that
Yeah,
he
they
was like
didn't.
many
Like
hours late almost.
he got there way too late.
Yeah, there was no chance.
Yeah.
No chance. Well, anyways, we have the Gloria dying montage.
Yeah, like he takes her to church and they go and walk in the park and he's there at the hospital and basically it seems like he decided to listen to Daniel and be close to her, as he
In
tries to solve
reality,
this.
right?
Yeah.
Though I do think in church he would have been working through it too. I feel like
Oh,
that is just normal church rush.
I absolutely.
Like my dad, oh my God. Like my dad forced me to go to church because I found out later as he felt that you have to make a decision for yourself about religion. But he was always like working or reading a book. Like he was never paying attention in church.
Yeah. Also, we see Gloria with a student. So
Right.
she was clearly good enough at violin to teach it. I understand that doesn't necessarily mean she was professional, like concert
Well, no, I mean she could be.
quality, but
I don't even know if she's a teacher or not. Like I know she gave violin to a student. Like yeah, maybe she teaches one person in the neighborhood, or this could be like her friend's daughter who wants to play violin. There's a lot of different things.
okay.
But no, she's obviously really good.
The scene. The two of them in the bedroom as Gloria's like trying to pack
To
and
go
like
back to Glasgow.
and she's unable to speak to him and he's unable to look up at her.
I think that was a totally real memory.
Oh my God. Just heartbreaking.
I mean, it makes me think about Bella from Hannibal again. Like, sometimes I think Gloria doesn't want Rush to engage in what she's feeling because it makes it worse.
Yeah.
Or she's just really upset that she won't go back to Glasgow with her or wherever she's going.
What's happening, and I don't know that there are English verbs for it, but in Japanese there's a set of two verbs. There's amaeru, which is expressing the need for someone to take care of you. And there's amayakasu, which is reading that those kinds of signals from a person and, taking care of them, giving them what they need, anticipating their needs, that kind of thing. And I feel like the one conflict at this point in their marriage is that she is expressing the need for his affection, his attention, whatever.
Right.
And in order to deal with the pain of this situation, he has shut down any ability to read that. Or to interact with her, or to turn on whatever part of his brain would,
Right.
play nice and be charming and be good with people.
Yeah.
And it, too real.
It's beautifully real,
Yeah.
though. I think you need more of this in media.
Yeah, it's insane that it is one episode of a two-season sci-fi show where we are getting this incredibly dramatic, real portrayal of, you know, the way two people deal with impending death.
Right. And what it doesn't do is have that speech of, because a lot of times the way you see it in other media is like, they're like, oh, but what can I do about it? Like, oh, I'm so angry. Yell, 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 have, like, put it into words. But that's not how it goes. Like,
yeah.
I lost my cousin when I was 16, and we were fairly close. And when she was dying, I just didn't, I still feel bad about it. I didn't know what to do. And to watch her die was too painful, you know?
Yeah. None of us really know what to do, because there's very little discussion of death in our culture.
Yeah.
And my mother is a hospice nurse.
Yeah.
But, like, so I've had conversations about, you know, at what point a person wants their life to end, and at what point, mm-hmm. you know, it really is over, and, you know, all you can do is make somebody comfortable and let go. And there's people who have never had to deal with that at all until, you know, suddenly they're 70 years old and them or their husband or wife is sick.
Right.
You know, and my grandmother spent her whole decline to her dying day believing that she would go to the doctor and they would take her pain away and she'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
Because,
that's what happened.
You know, she just hadn't ever dealt with any of it, and she wasn't the smartest human in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know.
Oh, God.
Anyway.
Oh, this episode.
Oh, God. I can't even. Okay. There is this musical interlude as Rush sleeps, like dream within a dream.
Right. Which you barely ever see him do in the show.
Yeah. And he's clearly, you know, remembering good times with Gloria. It's his second or third nosebleed of the episode, I assume.
Yeah.
Which is a bleed through because of the pressure on his mind physically.
Right. Well, haven't you ever, like, dreamt of something that actually happened to you outside of your dreams? Like, I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Like, one time my tent was open and I got rained on, but I dreamt that I was, like, jumping into a lake.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you know? No. And that your brain does more of that when you need sleep very badly.
Ah.
Yeah. The more tired you are, the more excuses your brain will make for you. Oh, you're sitting completely upright and you're very cold, and that's fine. You are outside on a bench and the wind. Here, reach for a blanket next to you. See if you can get that over you. It's fine. Just stay asleep. Like,
that makes sense.
Yeah, I have a lot of experience with how badly one's mind wants to stay asleep.
I do like that the music that is playing over his montage, by the way, is something he would never listen to in real life.
No, it appears, because when he wakes up, he pushes a button to turn off the music.
I know, that's really surprised me.
So, I wonder if it's a, like, maybe it was one of their first dates, maybe it played at their wedding or something, like...
I don't know.
If it's something that we think of as atypical for him, but has actual emotional meaning to him. And it's mm-hmm. something that he doesn't listen to anymore, right?
Right.
It's something that he would only listen to in this memory.
Right. Well, the only music we've ever heard him listen to was opera, right? In the first episode.
Yeah, classical stuff.
If that reminds him of Gloria, I don't know. Anyways, so Jackson comes back and they meta the shit out of it again.
Yeah.
Like, the Jackson figure keeps trying to do what the memory says he should do. Like, he talks about the Lucian Alliance, even though Rush has already told him he's not going to work on the Stargate program. But Rush won't let him do it.
Yeah. And Rush kind of pries this bit of information out of him. Jackson is the one Rush is most willing to be like, okay, fine.
Right.
Be my interface to the rest of this system. Because
right.
I don't give a shit what I say to you. And I'm not emotionally tied to you.
I wonder what his relationship with Daniel in reality was like.
I would love to see it.
Yeah, I'm really curious about it. Because all we know is just how Rush deals with this illusion of him when he's in a very stressful situation.
Yeah.
But you know what? He was probably in a stressful situation when he was talking to Daniel those other times, too. You know, when his wife was dying.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. So Jackson basically helps him figure out that, you know, 46 is important. And I'm going to pat myself on the back right here, because when I heard that, I was like, oh, that's how many chromosomes we have.
Oh.
So, and when they said it, confirmed it later, I was like, yes! I've watched so much sci-fi now that I can predict shit.
Yeah. Like, time 4 or 5 through this, I realize, because there's some really intense lighting in this, in Rush's memory parts of this.
Right.
Like, heavy lens flare and stuff like that.
He's all washed out, for sure.
He's very washed out. And one of the most dramatic ones is when he's walking up to his house for the first time. And there's a huge lens flare obscuring the door number.
Oh, I didn't notice that part.
Until, like, it obscures it, and then you get a tiny flash of it, and then Rush's body is in front of it. So it's on screen for less than a second the first time.
I do like how much they pepper 46 throughout the whole...
Yeah.
Dream sequence.
Even though, I mean, some of it we couldn't see. Like, we were shown it, but right. We weren't shown it for long enough to notice it, really.
I think the only one that was obvious was the license plate, because he does really look at that for a while. And, like,
yeah, the clock, the license plate, and the psalm, I think.
Oh, yeah, it was the psalm.
They show us.
For some reason, I wrote Hitchhiker's Guide. Oh, yeah, because 42. Never mind.
Oh, yeah, because Jackson just literally goes, well, it's not 42. That's the answer to life, the universe, and everything.
And Rush is like, I know.
And Rush is like, yeah, whatever.
I'm not interested.
I can't deal with
this.
You right now, Eli. I mean, Daniel.
Do you want to go back to the planet? Or do we want to finish Rush's story out first?
Whatever. There's rocks, and James tries to do a good thing and actually messes up. And
yeah, I just always want to talk about James. But then I realize we'll have a lot more to talk about for her next episode.
Yeah,
so...
like, James is good in this episode. She does what she needs to do.
She takes a risk because she has to.
And then next episode, like, she's on the team that brings back Greer, and
like, Young is pissed at her because it's not.
Yeah, and Young is super dismissive of both her and Greer because they're not the white boy lieutenant. Like,
right.
Anyway, whatever.
So Rush, let's just do Rush. He goes and visits his wife, even though he never did before.
Do we know? I mean, how would he have a memory of that hotel room if he never did before?
Because. Doesn't Daniel, he says, I didn't go to her. He said he wasn't there when she died. That's why I think he was so angry with Daniel, because Daniel keeps saying, go to your wife, and he doesn't do it.
We don't see her die, though.
Okay, that's true. So this could have been another memory.
Yeah, I assume he visited her in the hospital, but it was one of those, like, I mean, they had a conversation like that, and then he left. He was like, oh, I have to go to work for just a minute, and never came back.
And went to Icarus?
I don't know.
I don't think that conversation could have happened even slightly like what they had. Because I don't
think Rush turned
into an asshole yet.
Yeah, so maybe you're right. Maybe he never went.
Yeah.
And this is the one scene of Gloria that he's imagining.
Yeah.
Right? Imagining all the things she would have said to him, or had said to him at other times.
And then compiling it.
And creating this version of Gloria trying to comfort him while he fails to comfort her.
It's very twisting.
Yeah.
I assume this is Rush trying to work with himself. I want to think that Destiny is a part of it with some sort of artificial intelligence. But I really think... Well, I mean, no, Destiny has to be a part of it, because this is how he figures out...
Yeah, this is literally... What's happening is not actually his memories. What's happening...
This is a completely ship-created thing.
Is that he's interfacing with the ship and is using this memory to filter that data.
Right.
Which is why he's looking kind of in the corners of everything instead of straight at the problem.
Right.
Also because he's Rush, king of the workaround, but...
Oh, wasn't there? Didn't Brody say something about? Oh no, it's next episode where they're like, "There's no fucking workarounds, dude."
Yeah.
Unless we all want to die. Okay. All right. Well, I think we just have to say we don't know where the words Gloria says come from, but I think we all know that there's truth to it.
Yeah.
So
it's. I mean, even if it's just a side of him, right? Even if it's the other voice in his mind.
The forgiving voice of himself.
That's saying, like, you're here now because you need to be here. Right. And you wouldn't be here watching me die if you could help it. But what you need is in this room. The answer you need is here.
Which is sad because if you think about it, for a lot of his pain and his grief, probably the answer he needed was if he was there with her when she died.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing that makes me question exactly how sick she was at this point, if he was ever in this hospital and she looked like this.
Yeah, she has all her hair.
She has all her hair.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they said, no point going through chemo. Like, you're dead, Jim. And so she decided not to.
Mm-hmm.
But
I don't know. Some part of me thinks that she went to England by herself when she's packing, right?
Yeah.
And maybe that could have been why he wasn't there, is that she decided to be with her family instead when he went to work.
Yeah. Well, also, if she's still a British citizen, her medical care is free in the UK.
That's a good point. But if he worked for anything as good as Berkeley or anything like that, they probably had some bomb-ass health insurance.
Well, this is old enough that there were lifetime limits.
Ah.
And she'd already had cancer once.
Oh, that's a pre-existing condition.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, not to get super, but I know plenty of Canadians that are like, oh yeah, I go home to when I need to go to the dentist once a year and to get my checkup and this, that, and the other, even though they have health insurance in America.
Right. No, that makes sense.
So, anyway, we're not talking about this actual weird heartbreakingness.
So, I mean, he figures out the answer. I think there's about 6 levels of that answer in it, and then he leaves, which is good for him. But I do think we're being a little dismissive of the Chloe, Matt, Eli storyline. Because, yes, it's very stupid and annoying at first, but, like, Chloe feels very guilty at the end of it, right? Like, she basically is the cause of all of this.
Well, meanwhile, I think Young feels super guilty, right? Because he thought they were cute, and he sent them to a planet he thought was safe. And so if they get died, that's on his hands.
Yeah, if but they he get sent died, them to planets all the time. Like, he's made a huge point about it in early episodes. Like,
he's not sent Chloe to a planet before.
Chloe was on, she was on a couple planets. Hold on, let me remember them all. She died on the time planet.
Yeah, but she didn't actually.
Oh, that's because Young didn't actually send her in this timeline.
Because because in the third timeline, the very first team brought the Kino back, and they got the fuck out.
She was technically on the planet, the Obelisk planet.
You're right. But not on the first away team.
Yeah. Okay, you're right. You're right. Good point. Why did he send her on the first away team?
Because they were being cute, and it looked safe, and he was sending Scott and Greer, and what could go wrong?
But man, it's not going to repair her relationship with Eli, because I feel like Eli sort of blames her a little bit, even though it's mostly his fault.
It is totally his fault. No, I don't feel like he blames her at all.
Okay.
I think he feels guilty himself because of the Kino thing.
I like that.
And Chloe figures out the map thing to get them out.
Yeah. I think that the real star of this, I'm so up and down with Matt, but it's Matt. Like, he never once blames them, and you don't even see it in his eyes. He's like, where you see it in his eyes.
He's so good.
He's a real, like, live in the present moment kind of guy.
Yeah, he's like, okay, we're here now, we deal with it.
Which is
a really, really good trait in a leader, right? Like, you can't hold grudges. You've got to deal with the situation you have. You can't keep hoping for a different one.
Right, you can't just go through all the what ifs that could have been and be jealous of them.
Yeah.
You just gotta do what you gotta do. No one meant for any of that to happen. You just gotta keep going. And yeah, Matt is a very strong leader, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
He's a good kid. I like him.
So anyways, Young is all like, oh, hey, Rush didn't die like I wanted him to. Hooray, now he can save my favorite.
Yeah.
And Rush is obviously not coherent.
Yeah.
And, yeah. And what I do like is the very end scene where you realize that Stargate Universe is not Atlantis and it's not SG-1, where Rush is like, yeah, we have the code, but we have, like, 12 billion permutations to go through before it means anything.
Yeah. Like, he was able to read enough of a symbol out of the ship to be like, oh, it's linked to this.
Yeah. It's amazing.
So, finally and in conclusion, this episode is about so much more than some people lost on a planet and how good a leader Matt is and Rush trying to find a code inside a computer.
It's very layered.
Yeah.
And it really reveals Rush as a character, finally, after 9 episodes of you not knowing if he's a good guy or a bad guy.
Yeah.
But it doesn't answer the most important question I had asked myself when I first saw this episode title. And it doesn't answer, are you human or are you Dancer? That was a very bad joke. That was a killer's joke.
Oh, see, I was getting ready to say, like, he may not be a good guy, he may not be a bad guy, but he's the guy. But that's a terrible wrestling joke right now. So anyway.
Wow. Is that why I've been seeing wrestling up on Hulu? I thought that was Callie, not you.
Nope. It's all me. I watched like 9 hours of Monday Night Raw because Sidewalk Slam hasn't released an episode since WrestleMania. And it was making me crazy.
So I guess our final thoughts are just ouch.
Very ow.
Gosh, this episode's really good. And it has so much bearing on everything else.
Yeah. I will say the ring we only saw in flashback.
Yeah.
Or inside his head. So in his head he still wears it, but it does not exist.
Oh my god, he's Dom Cobb.
Yep.
Fuck. Gloria is Mal?
Wow.
Who's Arthur? Oh my god, it's Brody.
And he had a dream within a dream. Wait. Somebody needs to call Chris Nolan and figure out how much he liked this episode.
Chris Nolan doesn't like anything except what he does.
Yeah, I doubt he even likes that. Probably true to artist form.
Probably. Well, in any case, unless you have anything else to add, I think we gotta move on to Lost.
Yeah, on to Lost. So where can they find us?
Oh, yeah, good point. sgupodcast.tumblr.com.
Yay.
So yeah, just talk to us there if you want. Bye. Yeah.
Bye.